thank you so much for being on with us. Again, it's your second time, which means we get to teach you the secret handshake.
Over the radio.
Yeah, but it'd be a little tricky, but we'll pull it off. By the way, sorry about your Dodgers last night.
Thanks for bringing that up, Rich. I was just about to make peace with it all, and now you poured a little salt in the wound. Sorry. Appreciate that.
It's a good way to start the conversation. Your movie, Last Flag Flying, opens at select theaters nationwide this weekend. Obviously, you'll take a look at the script, but is it easier to be persuaded to do something when you know that a guy like Richard Linklater is involved?
It sure is. You know, that's the joy of having some success in any line of work, but you get to work with some really great people. So the writing is better, the directing is better. I knew that Richard Linklater wrote this script and he was going to direct, and I love his work. And so I heard that Steve Carell and Lawrence Fishburne were thinking about it as well, but nobody had signed on yet. And we kind of all signed on at the same time. And it was just a joy. We bonded really strongly. And it's a sweet story. It's an earnest story. I think it's very honest. It's also very funny.
Let's talk about your character of Sal Neelan. Is it safe to say he's a guy who needs perhaps a lot of visceral experiences to process his experiences in Vietnam?
You know, I think what was so great about doing this film, and I talked to a lot of vets, certainly in my father's generation, the Great War, there weren't many people who wanted to talk about that. My father didn't really, my father-in-law didn't really. It was Vietnam vets who came back, and a lot of them were in PTSD and not necessarily recognizing it themselves. Some wanted to open up, some went into a cave, and in my case, in my character's case, Sal, he self-medicated because that's how he kept the pain and memories at bay. And I think it's very honest. Others suffer in different ways. So there's that. And yet there's also honor and nobility to the story and what transpires here, and a deep, deep-rooted friendship.
Building on that friendship, Brian, the camaraderie of the three of you, of these three characters, really came through in one clip I saw, buying the cell phones in the cell phone. It's a moment of lightness, but the camaraderie of the characters really came through. And there was a lot of improv. It felt like that was sort of an improv scene. And you've worked with Lawrence Fishburne in the past. Does that help when it comes to doing that sort of improvisational work?
Well, it does. You have to be comfortable with it. We were fortunate that we all got together in Los Angeles 3 weeks before we left for Pittsburgh to shoot the film. And that Last Flight Flying takes place in a bunch of different places, in New Hampshire and Dover, Delaware. And it's kind of a road movie, but we shot it in Pittsburgh. But to have the advantage of getting in there and just reading it through and seeing what the other characters are thinking and feeling, and Rick would go and he would listen and he would go home and write and bring it back to the next day rehearsal, and we'd read new scenes and addendums to scenes or cut some scenes, and we just kind of shaped it. So it's as if in the acting world, it's as if someone brought in a big square piece of wet clay. And all of us are leaning into the table in the middle, and we're all making our mark. We're carving into the clay, and trusting that our director will be able to guide us and say, "Yeah, I see what you're doing there. What about if you did that here?" You know, and it's like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense." You know, so it's all about discovery and respect for how other people work. And then once you get those characters down, yeah, you're right. We did a lot of improvisation. But when you start with a great script and you have total trust in your director and your other actors, it just makes it so much easier just to be able to veer off and explore.
We're talking with Bryan Cranston. The film is Last Flag Flying. We had Ken Burns on the show a few months ago talking about his Vietnam War series that was on, and he thought one of the big lessons that we needed to learn from Vietnam was not to blame the warriors. Your characters are openly critical of the leadership and the decisions made, but also there's a great honor in doing a job, even if you disagree with it.
The military is a family. I just got back from a USO tour, and, you know, this younger generation has been maligned greatly, accused of expecting a trophy if they just show up. But I got to tell you, Rich, these young men and women, young, either enlisted or officers, my wife and I were just so impressed. And every night after the full day of activities, we come home and we were just talking, and I met this person. And there's such honor and courtesy and respect and a diligence and a determination to focus on their duty. So I came away going, we're in good shape. Let's not worry about the generation. Let's just try to leave them a better place than what we have now. And it's okay. When you're in that family, it's like your own personal family. You can criticize your mother or your father or your crazy cousin and, oh, my God, they're coming over. I can't stand them. But they're still family. And so I took it that way when I was talking to vets, is that they would complain. They would bitch and moan about the commanding officers and stuff and some of what they thought were stupid details they had to do and the hours and the marching in the mud and the whole thing. But in the end of it, it's still their family. And if someone else came and criticized them, they would be the first to stand up and say, hey, you're out of line. So even in my character, Sal, who's crazy, he's addicted to alcohol and drugs, and he's such a massive consumer. He wants everything. He wants to, it helps him feel if he's consuming. He eats candy, he smokes a cigar, But the good thing about Sal and where I found his nobility is that he is also the first to back up a friend. He will go with you to the end of the earth. And even though he's a little bit hard to be around for any length of time, and we all know family members like that, in the bottom line is he would be there for you in a second.
Bryan, the road trip is sort of the framework for this movie in a lot of ways. That's also something that you've done in your personal life. I saw an interview we did recently about your motorcycle trips on Route 66 and on the Lonely Highway. Yeah. And also it mentioned that your next one that you want to take is a sort of a Western National Park road trip.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's the appeal of being on a road trip for you on a personal level?
I think any time that we get away from our surroundings, it helps. It helps restart you, I think. If you're in your own home, you go, oh, I've got to do this and I got to fix that. Oh, I've got to pick up that. I got to drop that off again. You can fill your day with endless amount of chores and things to do on your list to do for your house or your home or what you have to pick up or. But when you're on the road, everything is new. So I did most of my touring on a motorcycle. And so it's like walking fast. You're kind of alone, but if you're riding with others, they're there with you as well. And you don't know what's on the other side of that ridge. And it could be sunrise, and you're wondering, what is the day going to bring? Where are we going to end up? What is the next town going to be like? So all those kind of questions always intrigue me, and they kind of excite me. I like actually putting myself in the position of the unknown. And I guess that's why I like acting so much, is because I don't know if it's going to work. no one really does know. I think Last Flag Flying works extremely well, but that's my opinion. And I hope people go see it and embrace it for its story and sensibility.
Well, we're very excited about the movie, but I am also fascinated to hear a little bit about your theatrical experience that'll be coming up later this month on the National Theatre in London as you bring the words of Paddy Chayefsky to life as the mad prophet of the airwaves, Howard Beale. How did this project come to you?
Well, they looked around and said, who is mad as hell and not going to take it anymore? His iconic line, I get to say, we we're just about to open the previews right now, so we're in that sticky stage of progress where we're going through tech still, and you're wondering. You come off stage from a scene, and I go, "Wait, what's next?" I panic. What am I supposed to change into? Where am I supposed to go? It's that kind of sensibility right now, which is also kind of fun and alive. It keeps you on your toes. That's a little scary. I think it's a very important story. It's based on follows it very closely. Lee Hall, our writer, was very sensible to not mess with Paddy Chayefsky's words, but just try to see how he can make the adaptation to the stage make sense. And it's beautiful. It's directed by Ivo van Hove, a wonderful director, and I'm having a great time. We open soon, and so if any of your listeners are coming over to London, come see me at the National Theatre for Network, and I'm there until the end of March.
Also, it was wonderful to see you back, reunited with Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm. How much fun was that for you?
Well, I wrote it about it in my book. I wrote a memoir last year called A Life in Parts, and I wanted to put in all the different aspects, the parts that I play in real life and the parts that we all play in our personal life. And one of the sections of it is a couple experiences that I had on Seinfeld, and having the gift of being able to watch a master at work in Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. And for that matter, Julia and Jason and Richard, they're so amazing to be able to watch and see how they craft a joke, and it was so much fun. So now on Curb Your Enthusiasm, he called and said, "You want to be on the show?" I said, "When?" That's the answer. When? Hopefully, I'm not busy and I'm in Los Angeles and we could do this. And I got to play his therapist. Which is so much fun. And all there was one piece of information that I had to get out at some point, and there was one piece of information that he had to get out at some point. Other than that, all the scenes are improvisation. And you just go. And it was just a delight. And everyone on the show was so much fun. I can't wait for another opportunity. Hopefully, they'll have me back.
I know people ask you all the time about Better Call Saul and whether Walter White might make an appearance on there. And I read a conversation you had recently where you said you'd be happy to do it as long as it's organic to the story.
I know Vince Gilligan so well and Peter Gould, who are both co-creators of Better Call Saul and were with, of course, Breaking Bad. And if they called and said, would you, I would do the same thing. Go, absolutely. How do you want to do this? Let's do it. But I know that they have such integrity to their show and their characters that they wouldn't do it as a stunt. It would have to have something germane to that story. And, even if it was just a slice of life, I think it would be great. I'd love to do it. I know Aaron Paul would love to do it too, to play Jesse on our show.
Well, Brian, it's your second time on the show, so you feel like an old friend to us now. I wonder if you'd be willing to play a little game with us.
Okay.
You've created so many iconic roles through the years with Walter White, with Hal from Malcolm in the Middle, Dr. Tim Whatley and Seinfeld, but people may not know you had a long, long career before those shows made you a huge success. And I wonder if we could throw out some characters and see if you could recall what show they were on.
Wow. You might just stump me. Oh, I would be surprised if I remembered.
All right, let's start with this one, because actually you talked about this show the last time you were on with us. Your character was Douglas Donovan.
Now, that show I know, because I played that character for 2 years on a daytime drama, a soap opera called Loving, back in the early 80s.
With our friend John O'Hurley.
With our friend John O'Hurley, yeah. He was my nemesis on the show. In fact, we married the same woman. One of your typical, at the same time, we were married to the same woman at the same time. And, of course, I didn't know it, because good guys don't know it.
Right.
Bad guys know it. So, yeah.
All right, you're one for one. How about this one? Uncle Russell.
Okay. Uncle Russell was a character I played on a show for CBS called Raising Miranda, a beautiful show that I think was before its time. It was really sweet and funny, but it wasn't like a laugh riot. And I don't think the network really knew what to do with it at that time. But I enjoyed it.
You're on a roll here, two for two. How about Lieutenant Gordon Denton?
Lieutenant Gordon Denton. I guess he's a cop, or he could be in military, right?
Yeah, I would go with your first instinct. I would go with cop.
A cop. Lieutenant Gordon Denton. I don't remember. What was that one?
That was Brooklyn South.
Oh, boy, that was a story. I put that in the book, too. That was one of my worst experiences as an actor. No wonder I blocked that.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Now, you've played a lot of doctors through the years. This was just a one-time appearance as Dr. Harding Fletcher.
Dr. Harding Fletcher. Probably on something like Murder, She Wrote.
Ooh, you're so close. You're right in the neighborhood with another TV icon.
I'll say maybe Matlock.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. There you go. All right, and the last one,
early. You know, Rich, you got to have a bell.
I know. We should have a bell.
Ding, ding, it's winning. Yeah.
Okay. Or thunderous applause. Here's the last one. Do you remember playing Robert Hollis?
Robert Hollis.
Working with an Academy Award winner.
Was Robert Hollis my character on a show called Airwolf?
Yes. Wow. That's impressive. Now four out of five with about 150 IMD listings. Well done, sir.
Wow. Well, that was a very important show for me to do because I met my future wife on that show.
Well, there you go.
That was like 31 years ago or so. 31, 32 years. Wow.
Well, that's incredible.
Time flies.
Now, you were, we sent this out to your people to let them know. It's not up there with Emmy Awards or Tony Awards, certainly, but you were voted by our listeners. A couple of 100,000 votes came in to pick our favorite guest of last year, and you won this Downtown Madness. You took the crown away from John O'Hurley, who had won the previous year.
Oh, boy. That's fantastic. Anytime I could defeat that man, I shall take it. Well, that's fun. What do I win?
Admiration, respect. Maybe a T-shirt. I don't know.
Okay. Next time I happen to be in Maine, how about we all gather? We'll have a gathering with all your listeners, and we'll do something, and we'll have a little party and say hello to everybody. And I'll pick up my trophy then.
That sounds fantastic. Brian, thank you so much. We appreciate you making time for us this afternoon. Wish you well with Network. Wish I could get over there and see it. It sounds amazing and can't wait to see the movie.
Terrific. Thanks so much, guys.